Hello, true crime friends. It's me, Kimmy, and you're listening to the Always Talking Crime podcast. Guys, welcome back. It's me. So, before we get started, I do want to make mention that, of course, this is a true crime podcast, and we are obviously going to be talking about real life situations where people were victims of very vicious crimes. And I take this responsibility very seriously. I always try to be as respectful as possible to each and every victim that I talk about. But as far as the criminals go, they are all assholes, and especially the fucking asshole that we're talking about today, Chris Watts. This is part two. So if you somehow missed part one last week, please go back and listen to part one and then come back to listen to this episode.
This is Stacey. Hi, Stacey. My name's Nicole, and I'm calling because I'm concerned about a friend of mine. I dropped her off at her house at 2 in the morning last night because we were out of town together, and we were on the way back from the airport, and she was having issues, and she's pregnant, and I haven't been able to get a hold of her this morning, and I've gone to her house, and her car's there, and stuff like that, but she won't answer the door, she won't answer phone calls, she won't answer text messages. And I'm just really, really concerned. And she had a doctor's appointment this morning, and she didn't go to it. And I don't know what to do. I've called him and talked to him, and he said that she went on a play date with her other two daughters. But, like, if she went on a play date, they're both in car seats. Why would she not take her car?
Perfectly understandable. Do you happen to know her address, Nicole?
I'm at the Senate outside the house. It's 2825 Saratoga Trail in Frederick. And then I said, like, Chris, can you just come home and check to make sure she's okay? Because the shoes she wears every single day are right inside her door. And he was like, yeah, I'll be there in 3 minutes. Well, that was 45 minutes ago. And I called him and asked him again, can you please come home? And he's like, I'm 45 minutes out.
Okay. Nicole, I'll go ahead and call in. I just need you, if you could please repeat her address to make sure I have it entered correctly.
2825 Saratoga. It's Saratogatr.
Okay. Thank you.
I think stands for trail.
Thank you. And can I get a phone number that you're calling me from? Area code first.
970.
Thank you. Okay, Nicole, tell me exactly what happened.
So, we were out of town for work, and we flew in last night. Our flight got delayed, and I dropped her off at her house at 2 in the morning. She's 15 weeks pregnant. And she wasn't feeling well over the weekend, and she was very, like, distraught and out of the sorts because her and her husband are having issues. So, because she wasn't, like, eating or drinking and stuff like that. So then this morning, I was like, let me know if you need me to take you to your doctor's appointment because you're not feeling well. And I have called and texted. I've come to her house. She's not answering the door. She's not responding to text messages, phone calls. I've had other friends reach out to her. None of us can get her to respond to us. They have two little girls that are 3 and 4. I mean, there's no movement in the house whatsoever. And he states that she didn't take them to daycare and was going to go on a play date, but they're both in car seats and their car, her car is here.
What's your name?
It's in the garage. And I'm like, what's your name? Huh?
What's your name?
Shanann Watts. It's S-H-A-N-A-N-N
Watts, W-A-T-T-S.
Do you know her date of birth or how old she might be?
Oh, if you would have asked me that, I would know it.
That's okay. If you just know her approximate age, that's good.
She's
kind
of in the 20s, early 30s.
Bear with me here one moment. When was the last time that you heard from her?
When I dropped her off at her house, I watched her, made sure she got in the house. That was at 2 a.m. It was actually 1:55. I literally live like 5-10 minutes from her.
And her vehicle is it parked in the garage?
Yes. It's a white Lexus. And I probably, because I was concerned, I know I don't want to get a doctor's office in trouble, but I went to the doctor's office because I've been used in as doctors, and I said, I know you can't give me things because of HIPAA, but can you just tell me if she showed up at her appointment this morning? And the lady was like, no, she did not.
Okay. Is that unusual behavior for her to not show up to her doctor's appointment?
No.
Okay.
No. Pregnancy, like, she was so excited and then got blindsided from her husband that he wanted to separate a week ago.
And her husband's name is Chris?
Yes, his name is Chris Watts.
And he told you that she went on a play date today with
the girl.
Okay.
With the 4-year-old and... She told me last night when we were driving home, she's like, the morning's going to suck because I have to take the girls to daycare tomorrow. And I made the statement, well, you could keep them home with you. And she's like, no, that'd be more exhausting. She's like, I have to get up and take them because I have a doctor's appointment at 9.
Bear with me here one moment. I'm just typing this information in the call here.
And I'm not trying to cause problems more between them. I just want to know if she's okay.
Okay. What's her phone number?
Give me 1 second and I'll look it up for you. It is 910-850-3286.
Okay. And Chris told you that he was on his way?
Yes. I just talked to him. Well, I talked to him here. One of our other friends did via text because I was going to the doctor's office, and she said he would be here in about 30 minutes, and that was at 108. And then I called him. And said, Chris, I'm at your house. I'm not trying to cause drama or anything. I just need to know your wife, okay? I was like, where are you? And he was like, I'm on I-70. I'm about a half hour to 45 minutes out. And I just said, okay. And then I hung up and called you guys because I'm just worried.
Okay. Nicole, what kind of vehicle are you in right now?
I'm in a white Dodge Dart.
Alrighty, we do have a call in, Nicole. We'll have an officer come out that way as soon as we can. I would just advise you, to not try to make entry into the house or anything like that until the officers can get there. In the meantime, if you do hear from her, just give us a call back and let us know, okay?
Okay.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
2825.
On Monday, August 13th of 2018, the Frederick, Colorado Police Department received the call that you just heard. It was from Nicole Atkinson and came in at approximately 1:30 p.m. We heard Nicole report that she had dropped Shanann off at home at around 2 a.m. early that morning after they both returned from their business trip to Arizona. Nicole was very concerned because she had not heard or been able to reach Shanann. Shanann was 15 weeks pregnant, had lupus, and was apparently diabetic as well, although this was actually the first report of diabetes that I had ever heard of Shanann having. Shanann had had a doctor's appointment at 10 a.m. that morning, and the two of them also had plans to meet for lunch that day with one of Nicole's new promoters. Shanann didn't play around when it came to her family or her business, so the fact that Shanann was not responding to calls or texts from anyone was very concerning to not just Nicole, but to every single person in Shanann's friend circle. Shanann was the type of friend and leader that would text every single morning around 7 a.m. with good morning, beautiful messages. Nobody had received texts from her that morning, and she wasn't active on any of her social media accounts either, so it was hugely out of character for her. At approximately 11:30 a.m., Nicole and her teenage son Nicholas had gone over to Shanann's home to look for her and make sure that she was okay. They were afraid that she had possibly passed out and needed an ambulance. Nicholas stood on top of his mom's white Dodge Dart to look through the windows on the garage door. He could see Shanann's white Lexus SUV parked inside the garage, with the car seat still inside the garage as well. Nicole knew the code to their front door, but when she tried to open it, she found that the inside latch was engaged on the door. This made it impossible to open the door more than just a couple of inches. Nicole could see the flip-flop Shanann always wore right next to the door, so she immediately called Chris and asked him to come home to check and make sure that Shanann was okay. Chris didn't seem concerned in the least, though, and told Nicole that Shanann and the girls had gone on a play date with a friend. Right away, Nicole felt that he wasn't being appropriately responsive to the situation. For one thing, Shanann was always in constant contact with her, so if she had gone on a play date, she still would have responded to text messages, especially considering the fact that they had plans to go to lunch. She had Nicholas try to force open the garage door because she knew that this would trigger the house alarm. She was hoping that if Shanann was incapacitated inside the house, words are hard, incapacitated inside the house, the alarm might wake her up so that she'd be able to answer the door. Apparently, Chris had disarmed the alarm from his phone at approximately 12:45 p.m., though, so that didn't work. Nicole and Nicholas left the house, and like we heard in the 911 call, they drove over to the doctor's office where Nicole knew Shanann had her appointment scheduled that morning. She wanted to check if Shanann had showed up to this appointment. As confusing as it was to me that this doctor's office basically said, fuck HIPAA, they were able to find out that Shanann had been a no-show earlier that morning. Nicole and Nicholas returned to the Watts home and called Chris again. Nicole was also texting back and forth with Cassie Rosenberg. Both of them told Chris that they were going to call the police. Cassie had been texting back and forth with Chris for at least 10 minutes when Nicole arrived to check on Shanann the first time. Cassie started the conversation with, quote, Shanann is in a very bad way emotionally, and I'm worried about her. I know you are having issues, but I don't know to what extent. But I do know that I have never seen her so broken to this extent, and I am worried. Chris said, she went to a friend's house with the kids. She won't tell me where, though. When I get home, I will update you. Then Cassie answered, sweetie. And for the record, I don't think Cassie really thought Chris was a sweetie. Nobody knows about you and her other than Nikki and I, so why would she go or where would she go if not with Nikki and not to Arizona where I'm at? Her car and shoes and everything is at the house. What the heck is going on with you guys that she would totally shut out everything? It's not like her. Chris said, I told Nikki about it so she wouldn't freak out anymore at the house. I think Christina knows as well. We talked last night and I told her I wanted to sell the house, get something smaller. Separation would be best right now if we can't work through issues. I really don't want you to think I'm a bad person, Cassie. Barf. And I fucking love this woman. Cassie responded back with, right now, I don't care about you or your relationship or what kind of person you are or not or what I think of you. And I'm not trying to be rude when I say that. Right now, I'm worried about your damn wife and her well-being. Nikki is calling the police, period. She is broken emotionally. Her blood sugar's dropped due to not eating, and it could cause her to pass out. So unless you want the police to bust your damn door down, you get home and check on your family. I'm sorry if I'm being rude or whatever, but I am concerned. And Chris said to that, I'm going home, Cassie, on my way. Don't call the police. I will be there in 45 minutes. Now, why would a husband with a missing family not want the police to be called? Especially if he was a 45-minute drive from the house and it could literally be a medical fucking emergency. But thankfully, Nicole promptly said, fuck that, and called the police anyway. Officer Scott Coonrod was dispatched to the Watts home on Saratoga Trail, which was a subdivision of new homes about 10 minutes away from the town of Frederick. They're roughly $350,000 to $400,000 homes, and as you can imagine, it's a super nice neighborhood. The Watts home seemed to be the largest of all of the houses in that neighborhood. Nicole and Nicholas were waiting for the officer outside the house. Officer Coonrod tried to open the front door himself, but again, it only opened a couple of inches because of the safety latch. He called out, identifying himself as a police officer, to see if anyone was inside the home, but nobody answered. All of the windows on the ground floor were locked, and so was the sliding glass door at the back of the house. I mean, like, if you're going to be calling out to people, even if you can't get the door open, and let's just say there's a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old inside, you would definitely think that at some point they would have heard some kind of movement going on inside the house, you know? Nicole, Nicholas, and Officer Coonrod stood outside the Watts' home while Nicole called all of Shanann's friends, as well as her mother, Sandy, to see if any of them had heard from her. Unfortunately, nobody had. Meanwhile, after obtaining Chris's cell phone number from Nicole, Officer Coonrod called Chris. He asked Chris for the key code to enter the home through the garage. Chris conveniently said that the code didn't work from the outside, but that he would be home in 5 minutes. One of my main case sources, other than the extremely lengthy 1,900-page discovery, was the Netflix documentary American Murder, The Family Next Door. And if you've already watched this yourself, then you already know that there's so much footage of this case that was captured on police body cam, which makes this case even more interesting. We don't always get to see the events leading up to an arrest. And in this body cam footage, we see Chris's gross ass pull up in his work truck. We see him jump out and he runs over to shake Officer Coonrod's hand real quick before opening the garage door and running inside. Now, one very odd thing to me was that Chris made a quick stop to open the passenger side door of Shanann's Lexus. And we're not certain why, but I do have a theory I will share in just a little bit. We don't hear Chris yelling for Shanann or the kids as he enters the house, which is a huge red flag. Anyone worried about their family would be calling out everyone's names, hoping that they were home. Meanwhile, Nicole, her son, and Officer Coonrod stood in front of the front door waiting to be let into the house. We can hear Sandy over speakerphone talking to Nicole. She says to Nicole, Nikki, you have my permission to enter my daughter's house. Chris opened the front door and Officer Coonrod asked him if he could come in, which is standard procedure. Since every homeowner has an expectation of privacy, police can't just walk into the home without permission. There needs to be either consent from the owner, a warrant signed by a judge, or an extreme circumstance. Like, police feel that failure to enter the home could lead to the destruction of evidence. Chris gave consent to check the entire house for any sign of Shanann and the girls, and upon entrance, they found no one in the home. There was no note from Shanann or really any indication of where this young mother and her two little girls could have been. But here's what they did find. They found Shanann's small black suitcase still sitting at the bottom of the stairs. Chris can be seen on the body cam footage trying to appear as a concerned husband, but failing fucking miserably. At one point, he goes into the master bedroom and comes out in just a few seconds with Shanann's wedding ring. This particular part of the documentary makes me want to slap the stupid ass look off Chris's face as he just stands there staring at his finger that's extended out towards Officer Coonrod. It's like he's trying to say without words that Shanann left him. And y'all can tell me what you think, but I have a feeling that he grabbed Shanann's wedding ring out of her car before he ran from the garage into the house. Feel free to comment on my social media or send me a message if you agree, disagree, what your thoughts are on that. But my theory is that he probably took the ring off of Shanann's finger before he put her body into his work truck. And it was easier for him to just put the ring inside the Lexus until he got home and could stage a crime scene or something to try to cover up the murders. I mean, I really feel like he thought he was going to have more time to take care of the situation before, you know, the cops were called or, you know, there was any kind of investigation whatsoever. But anyway, according to the discovery documents, Chris also found Shanann's cell phone between the ass crack of the couch cushions upstairs. Strangely, the phone was turned off, and the look of panic on Nicole's face at that point is just indescribable. Even Nicholas knew that that was out of character for Shanann because Shanann made money from her phone every single day. Chris, of course, did not know the password to open the phone because he's a dumbass, but thankfully Nicole did. She punched in the due date for baby Nico and the phone started pinging with tons of notifications. Chris authorized the officer to look through the phone, and he observed that no calls had been made that morning from the phone. There were a lot of missed calls, messages that had not been responded to or even read. Officer Coonrod called in Detective Baumhover to come to the residence to investigate further. Chris stated to the officer that he had been asleep when Shanann had arrived home at about 2 a.m. He woke up at 5 a.m. to get ready for work, and he said that they began talking about a separation because, yes, Chris, this is the exact best time for a couple to have such an important conversation. Okay. Chris stated that at that time it had been a civil conversation and they had not argued. He went on to say that he backed his work truck up to the garage at 5:27 a.m. to load up his tools before leaving for work. Chris explained that he had tools stolen in the past, so now he unloads his truck on Fridays. He said that Shanann had been in bed when he left and that she had told him that she was taking the girls to a friend's house that day. Chris didn't ask what friend. He said that he went directly to a job site and was alone there for a few hours. There was apparently an oil leak of some sort. And as a side note, Chris normally never texted his boss on the weekends. But the day previous, which was Sunday, August 12th, Chris had texted his boss out of the blue to make sure that he was going to be the only one at that site that everyone hated going to because of the distance. It was apparently almost an hour drive away from the Watts' home. Coonrod and Baumhofer thoroughly searched the home with Chris's permission. They found Shanann's purse and wallet with all of her credit cards still inside of it, along with some cash. And if we thought Nicole Atkinson was freaking the fuck out when Shanann's phone was found, Nicole's panic was even worse now. You can see it clearly on her face. Nicole pointed out quickly that the medications for Shanann and the kids were all still inside the purse, including the EpiPens for Cece's allergies. Everyone realized that Shanann would have never left the home without any of those medications. While they went on searching the rest of the house, Chris said that he was going to go for a walk around the neighborhood to clear his head, but he ended up staying on the back deck after taking Dieter outside. Nate, who was the next door neighbor, let them know that he had a security camera aimed at the street in the direction of the Watts residence. Now remember, Nate is the neighbor who had his home listed for sale. And remember, Shanann had recommended to Cassie just a few days before this. Anyway, Nate said that if Shanann had left the house, it would surely have been on his camera. Chris and the police went over to his house, and as Nate is setting up the TV to show what was recorded, Chris shows signs of obvious nervousness. He was looking down at his phone, texting someone who we later find out was Nikki, by the way. He was not even wanting to look at the TV screen. He was visibly shaking, rocking back and forth, and he had his fucking hands on top of his head, which was really bizarre. It's almost like he was trying to hold his fucking brain inside his skull. He looked so guilty at that point, like he had his hands up because he thought he was going to get arrested any second. It was just really weird. As the footage pops up on the screen, we can see Chris backing his truck into the garage, and he starts pacing back and forth and is sweating nervously. Nobody was even asking him any questions. They were just watching the footage. But Chris starts going on and on, over-explaining his reasoning, why he had put his tools in the garage, and why he was backing his truck into the garage. It's been reported that Chris never even parked in the driveway or pulled into the garage because he and Shanann didn't want there to be any oil stains left on their driveway. And the girls were known to be super light sleepers, so with the garage being directly underneath their bedrooms, he never backed his truck into the garage even one time before this date. When Nate turned off the security footage, the regular television programming came on and it showed a commercial for the show American Horror Story. The commercial, guys, was super eerie. It showed a fetus with a skull and maybe what looked like an hourglass, and suddenly what looked like a bunch of oil spilling inside. It was as if a higher power was trying to alert everyone what had happened. Chris suddenly turned to Officer Dahl and said, "Shanann is pregnant as well." And he looked terrified. The police body cam shows Chris shaking Nate's hand and leaving the residence, but Officer Dahl stayed to speak with Nate for a few more minutes. Nate immediately told him, "Chris was not acting right at all. He's never fidgety. He's never rocking back and forth. And he never loads his stuff in and out of the truck ever. He's normally quiet, never talks. So the fact that he's here blabbing his mouth makes me kind of suspicious of something. If he loads his stuff, he normally just walks back and forth because I get him on camera." Back inside the Watts' home, police note that inside the master bedroom, the comforter, sheets, and pillows had been removed from the bed. The sheet was next to the comforter on the floor, and the pillows were on the floor on the other side of the bed. The top sheet was missing, and when asked about the sheets, Chris explained that Shanann usually jumped into bed after a trip and would wash the sheets the next day to get the airport off of them. The girls' bedrooms had unmade beds, but the sheets and comforters were still on them. Chris has previously reported that their favorite blankies and stuffed animals were missing, though. There was an unmade bed in the corner of the very organized basement, and Chris told them that he had slept down there for a few times because of the separation. He said it had probably been Thursday and Friday, and that the girls both sleep in their own beds. The police continued their search around the neighborhood and the rest of the city. They looked through the houses that were under construction throughout the neighborhood, hoping to find them. They also searched construction dumpsters in the area, but found no signs of Shanann or the girls. It seemed like half the city was searching for them. And of course, everyone was holding out hope that they would be found and returned home safely. Back at the house, Chris gave police department consent to check Shanann's phone. According to Officer Coonrod's written report, which is included in the discovery, Shanann's phone showed an alert that the garage door had been opened at 12:42 hours, but that would have been around the time that Nicole and her son Nicholas were there. So I'm speculating that it could have been when Nicholas was trying to lift the door open, but who really knows for sure? All we do know is that nobody went into the house or came out of the house during that time. Christopher showed police his own phone and stated at least three times that he had left the garage door open when he left the residence that morning. And Officer Coonrod thought that was unusual. He felt like Chris's demeanor was nonchalant and only asked one time if he should even go out and look for his family. Other than that, he didn't seem really too concerned. Nicole and her son both reported that Chris was acting extremely nervous. One other thing that was reported was Nate, the neighbor, reported that he had heard Chris yelling loudly at Shanann in the past. I know there were other reports of him claiming that he had witnessed them fighting at the end of their driveway one time, but that had been redacted. Weld County Dispatch sent out a BOLO, which is a be on the lookout, for Shanann and the girls. Friends Jeremy and David came over to the Watts home that night to check on Chris. They found him vacuuming when they got there. The police were gone at this point, and Chris said he planned to stay at the house that night in case his family came home. He told his friends that the house was very strange and quiet without his kids, but Chris had a strong support group. He and Shanann, in fact, had a lot of friends. Officer James of the Frederick Police Department called Chris at 9:12 p.m. to see if he had heard anything, and Chris reported that he hadn't. He provided the names and phone numbers of five of Shanann's friends and then went on to tell the officer that he felt like he could never be himself or be who he was before he met Shanann, and that he felt they weren't in love anymore, and then pulled a dick move and said that it was totally possible that Shanann was seeing someone else. When Chris was asked if he himself was seeing anyone else, Chris lowered his voice and said, "Nah, I have not done that." He then, get this, said that he was going to go to work early in the morning to see what was going on, but that if his head wasn't there, he would roll out, which is crazy. I can't think of anyone in that position that would give a shit about their job. I mean, if your spouse and kids are missing without a trace, who really gives a fuck? And your job wouldn't expect you to be there. As Chris laid down to sleep that night, he knew that he was leading the police on a wild fucking goose chase. And he later said that he had trouble sleeping and had every single light in the house on. By the next morning, which was August 14th of 2018, things started to take a different turn. Nobody had heard from Shanann for more than 24 hours. At approximately 2 a.m., police officer Goodman called Chris to gather some information required for the missing persons report.
That's a different number now. This is Officer Goodman, Frederick Police Department.
And this is Chris Moss. I was trying to call you back from my personal phone. I kept saying call failed, but I just used my work phone.
Oh, this is your work phone? Okay. So, we're just trying to get some of your wife and kids' information entered in to put some alerts out there. I just need to get some information about the kids. Do you know how, on Bella, do you know her height, weight, hair color, and eyes?
So, height would be 42 inches.
Okay.
Weight would be 40 pounds.
Okay.
Hair color would be brown.
All right.
Eye color would be brown as well.
Okay, does she have any scars, marks, tattoos?
No.
Okay, and then on Celeste, same thing.
So she is 37 inches tall.
Okay.
She is 37 pounds.
Okay.
Blonde hair.
Eyes.
Hazel eyes.
Hazel. Okay, and again, no scars, marks, tattoos?
No.
Okay. Okay, we're just going to get that information out. And we're just going to keep... Does Shannon have any scars, marks, or tattoos?
She has the scar on her forehead only pops out every once in a while. It's from that car wreck she had a long, long time ago, but no tattoos.
Okay. Is it really a visible scar or no?
No, it's just like only when, like, you know, like only if she's like really heated.
Okay.
She's like outside running around a lot.
Okay. So, so it's like when there's a lot of sun?
Yeah.
Okay. And where is that on her forehead? Left.
Yeah, it's like right in the middle forehead. Like right, like, kind of like it runs like right in the middle, like just above the bridge of the nose. And it runs down. Just like where the glass stuff went to her forehead for that car accident.
And when you say goes down towards
the
mouth?
Yeah, it goes up and down, so side to side.
Okay.
Like, you have to really look for it, but, like, it's there, like, if she's, like, outside running around, it just kind of comes through.
Okay. So since the other officers have talked to you, has anything else come to mind that you can think of to help us try to figure out what's going on, where she is?
Nothing's come across. Just a bunch of text messages from a lot of friends just reaching out to me, just seeing, like, if they could help or whatnot, but nothing new.
Okay. Can't think of anybody, any other names or anything that come to mind that we could call.
No new names right now. Everybody else, it's just been like consistently the same people just reaching out to me.
Okay.
A lot of phone calls in North Carolina, but people I haven't heard from for a long time.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, if you hear something, obviously, let us know as soon as you can, and if you can think of anything, if anything, you know, you think of that might help us locate her, just let us know, okay?
Okay, thank you very much, sir.
All right, you have a good night.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Did anyone else notice that Chris Watts never even asked Officer Goodman if he had any update on his family or if he had been calling because they had been found? Not long after that phone call, at 4:38 a.m., Officer Goodman was contacted directly by Shanann's mom, Sandy. Sandy was upset and told the officer that she and her husband, Frank, both believed that her daughter and granddaughter's disappearances involved foul play. Not only that, but they honestly believed that Chris was involved. She stated that Chris was acting weird and out of the ordinary. She said that he was telling people that he had to go to work and that it just didn't seem right to her. She also stated that she felt like he was going to go pour oil on their bodies to dispose of them somewhere. So they should definitely check out his work site and see if they could locate Shanann and the girls. Wow, that statement was crazy. Chris was not shedding a single tear, she said, and he had become irate with Sandy when she mentioned her suspicions to him. Chris had also called a neighbor and said that he felt like the police were watching him and suspecting him of being involved in their disappearances, which was true. The police were watching the house and Chris 24/7 the entire time. So yes, that was true. But anyways, Officer Goodman advised Sandy not to threaten Chris or to say much to him in regards to the investigation. By that later that morning on August 14th, there was still not any sight or sound of Shanann and the girls. And at 9:15, Officer Dahl was back at neighbor Nate's house obtaining footage from the day before. Detective Baumhofer had given three specific times to check. And those times were 1:45 a.m. when Shanann had arrived home, 5:30 a.m. when Chris had backed his truck into the garage, and at 12:47 p.m., which was shortly after there had been the alert outside the garage door when Nicole and Nicholas had been at the house. So Chris gave multiple interviews outside his house that day, while police with canines investigated inside the house for any trace of what could have happened to Shanann and the girls. This was actually the first introduction most of us, including myself, had to Chris Watts. It was him talking to the fucking reporters on television. This recording is courtesy of Denver 7.
Chris Watts, WATTS.
What's going on right now around your house?
Right now, it's got canine units, the sheriff's department. Everybody's like they're doing their best right now to figure out like if they can get a scent, and see where they went. They went on foot. They went in a car. They went somewhere. And right now, it's just like they've been on point. They're going through the house trying to get a scent, and hopefully they can pick something up to where it's going to lead to something.
What happened?
She came home from the airport 2 a.m. and I left around 5:15. She was still here. And like about 12:10 in that afternoon, her friend Nicole showed up at the door. Like I had texted Shanann a few times that day, called her, say, you know, but she never got back to me, but she wasn't getting back to any of her people as well. And that's what really concerned a lot of people is like, she's not getting back to her. Like, if she doesn't get back to me, that's fine. Like, she gets busy during the day, but she didn't get back to her people, which was very concerning. And Nicole called me when she was at the door, and that's when I came home. And then walked in the house, and nothing, it's vanished. Nothing was here. I mean, she wasn't here. The kids weren't here. Nope, nobody was here.
What's your wife's name?
Shanann. Shanann.
What's your kids?
Bella and Celeste.
And it's called Celeste.
Celeste.
How old are you?
Bella's 4, Celeste's 3.
And so, how many times did you try calling her?
I called her 3 times, texted her about 3 times, just to say, you know, what's going on. Like, after I called her and texted her once, it was like, maybe she was just busy, like she'd just gotten back, you know, like everybody's probably calling her from her trip. She just got back from Arizona, and I figured she was just busy. But when her friend showed up, that's what it was like, it registered, like, all right, this isn't right.
Do you think she just took off? Do you think?
I mean, right now, I don't even want to just like throw anything out there. Like, I hope that she's somewhere safe right now and with the kids. But I mean, could she just taken off? I don't know. But if somebody has her and they're not safe, like, I want them back now. Like, that's what's in my head. Like, if they're safe right now, they're going to come back. But if they're not safe right now, that's the not knowing part. Like, if they're not safe, last night I had every light in the house on. I was hoping that I would just get just ran over by the kids running in the door and just like barrel rushing me, but it didn't happen. And it was just a traumatic night trying to be here.
I'm gonna ask some kind of tough questions about your relationship with your kids.
My kids are my life. I mean, those smiles light up my life. And this, like, I mean, last night, like, during, like, at, you know, when they usually eat dinner, it was just like I miss them. Like, I mean, I missed telling him, hey, you got to eat that or you're not going to get your dessert, you know, and just like, you're not going to get your snack after. But I missed that. Like, I miss them, you know, cuddle up on their couches. They have like a Minnie Mouse couch and a Sophia couch that they cuddle up on and watch, you know, Bubble Guppies or something. And it was just like, you know, it was tearing me apart last night, and I needed that. I needed that last night. And for nobody to be here last night and to go into their rooms and know that I wasn't going to turn the rain machines on, and I know that I wasn't going to turn their monitor on, and know I wasn't going to kiss them to bed tonight, it was, that's why last night was just horrible. I couldn't do it. I want everybody to just come home. Like, wherever they're at, come home. That's what I want.
Where is she gone for? She came back Sunday, you said at 2 at night.
Yeah, because her flight got delayed from Arizona because of, like, other storms around the nation. So yeah. She's supposed to get home like 11. She got home at like 1:48. Got in bed about 2.
What was she going for? Like family trip? Or
like? It was a Thrive direct sales. It was a local event that was down there between a bunch of leaders in the company.
And that night, that day she was back, I mean...
I left work early that morning, like 5:15, 5:30. So like she barely, she barely got into bed pretty much.
This might be a tough question, but did you guys get into an argument before she left?
It wasn't like an argument. We had an emotional conversation, but I'll leave it at that. But it's, I just want them back. I just want them to come back. And if they're not safe right now, that's what's tearing me apart. Because if they are safe, they're coming back. But if they're not, this has got to stop. Like, somebody has to come forward.
You spoken to her family, like her parents?
Yeah, I've, they've been in constant contact, like every hour. I mean everybody back in North Carolina and the East Coast. I mean, from Maine to Florida.
What is her parents saying to you?
Like, they're just like if they need to get on a flight, just let them know. Because I mean, they feel helpless right now because they're on the opposite side of the country. I mean, Colorado is, I mean, can't just drive around and look. I mean, it's just like you wouldn't really know what you're looking for. That's what the cops pretty much told me. That first day, I was like, I want to get out and drive around. They said, you wouldn't know what to look for.
Last couple questions. What is law enforcement? What have the police or the sheriffs or your neighbors? Is anybody? What's police saying to you?
Right now, this is what they're doing. Right now is with the canines and the scents. I think this is the biggest thing. This is the biggest thing they've done so far. Because yesterday, the Frederick Police Department did all the searching of the house and tried to gather whatever information they could. And with the detectives, officers, and sergeants, and today it's, I mean, obviously with all the activity that's around, it's there's a lot going on around here, and I really hope that all of this can lead to something positive.
What did your neighbors, did they see anything that your neighbors said?
No, like the police department went door to door asking, like, cameras and everything, just like...
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I'm going to cut it off right there. But I did want to read. I was just, while this was recording, I noticed a couple of comments that were fucking hilarious on this Denver 7 thread. So let me read you this first one that popped out at me. It's by user Danny Dacey. And she says, I keep coming back to this interview because I'll never get over how bizarre it is. It's like watching an alien in a human suit trying to pretend to be a normal person. He's saying what he thinks are the right words, but he has no idea how to emote properly. Why did he think this was a good idea? It's got to suck to be a psychopath and an idiot. And then Jillybean9563 said, I can't believe he thought giving this interview was a good idea. His attempt at being a normal human being is terrifying. And I totally fucking agree. Like, that's just crazy. And I'm sure most of you have already seen his interview. And there are just really no words for it, because I don't like to judge anyone's behavior while in the midst of a stressful event like this. And I know that everyone likes to analyze body language and count the fallen tears, but Chris may have just come right out and announced right here on television that he murdered his whole family, because his affect was absolutely unnatural. He had his arms crossed and he was almost smiling a couple of times before he answered questions. And that is called Duper's Delight, my friends. And according to MindTools.com, Duper's Delight is an emotional boost or thrill that some people get when they successfully cheat or deceive another person or organization. The rush they enjoy can lead them to repeat their dishonesty even when there is no reward other than the high itself. And there were a lot of red flags when Chris gave this interview. So the dog handlers were inside the Watts' home with the canines attempting to get any scent of Shanann, Bella, and Cece. When they first walked in, they could not help but notice the strong odor of cleaning products, which is never a good sign. They even noticed vacuum lines on the carpet, so Chris had obviously been keeping himself busy cleaning up the home prior to their arrival. Now, prior to the arrival of the canines, one of the deputies had a conversation with Chris and let him know what would be needed in order to have a successful search. Chris was told how important it was for them to be able to collect scent articles, which are items like clothes and shoes that are not touched by anyone else. But every single damn time that Chris was questioned about an object, Numbnuts mentioned that in some way, shape, or form, he had fucking touched them. The girls' clothes in the laundry hamper. Chris says that some of his own dirty clothes were mixed in. Of course. The comforters, blankets, and pillows from the girls' beds. Chris had already made the beds. Of course he did. But they were finally able to collect the scent from shoes from all three. One of the officers named Perez noticed that Chris seemed to show no emotion. He didn't ask any questions or offer to help in any way. If Chris's facial expressions changed at all, it would be to smile or to smirk inappropriately. His posture was erect and tense, and he wouldn't make eye contact with any of the investigators inside the house. One particular canine was a cadaver dog, which alerted to areas where there may have been some kind of trauma or struggle, such as an argument. Apparently, scents from people will pool and they will collect in certain areas where there's a conflict, which I find so interesting. And I'm not sure if I ever mentioned this to you guys in any past episodes, but my ex-husband was a dog handler in the Navy for 10 years. And I had the incredible opportunity to spend a lot of time around canines. We even adopted his final working dog before he got out of the Navy. And after working hard for 12 years detecting explosives, Sam got to live out the rest of his life with a sofa of his very own. Anyways, this particular canine was not able to locate any human remains. It was even brought to the neighborhood clubhouse and, you know, brought back to, like, they circled back to the Watts home, but they didn't have any success whatsoever. That dog was later taken to Chris's work truck. The dog detected but gave no hard command, but in all fairness, the dog never entered the vehicle, and I have questions as to why not. In fact, the doors to the trucks had even remained closed the entire time. So I don't know if it's just because it wasn't Chris's personal truck. It belonged to Anadarko, and maybe they needed to get a warrant to be able to search inside of the truck. That's the only thing I could think of, because if they are there and Chris is letting them, you know, search anything they want to, they should have, like, opened up the truck. So, honestly, that's the only thought that pops into my brain is maybe they weren't allowed to. Because it certainly seems like all of these police officers, canines, dog handlers, everybody involved was very on top of everything. So if somebody was there and they just failed to bring the canine into the truck, that would be really weird considering they're doing such a great job, you know, because that would be lame. But anyways, another canine and its handler entered the home after that. And this dog was what they call a track dog. This dog showed interest in the unmade bed in the basement and on an area of the floor at the bottom of the staircase, but did not have any final alerts on either area. Now, while all of that was going on, Nicole Kessinger, Nikki, ugh, gosh, I just want to vomit every time I think of her. Anyways, Kessinger has reached out to the police department and made arrangements to meet with them at a park to tell them what she knew about Chris and the situation at hand. I can't help but wonder if it was the very same park that she and Chris had met at in June before Shanann and the girls had left for North Carolina. But we're going to pick up with the events of Wednesday, August 15th, in the next episode, which is going to include the polygraph, the arrest of family annihilator Chris Watts, and an interview with Mistress Nikki Kessinger. Now, if you're enjoying this podcast, please, 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 please do me a favor and hit that follow button. It would also be awesome if you could rate and leave a review. I'm really working hard on growing this podcast, and your help is always so very much appreciated. All right, so just a couple little side notes. This is the first time that I have ever recorded an episode in the evening. And I'm recording it in the evening the night before it is published. So I'm never one of those podcasters that records something and then publishes it like mere hours later. I always record on either the Thursday or the Sunday before the drop on Tuesday or whatever day I would drop it. So I would have time to like make sure it was good. So I hope you guys enjoy it. I'm not going to have time to double check and triple check and quadruple check and make sure that it's the work that I would want to put out there. I'm just going to hope and pray and keep my fingers crossed that it is and that everybody enjoys, you know, my take on this situation. If you didn't hear in the first episode, I know a lot of Shanann's friends that I mentioned, especially in episode one, I know all of them and they're incredible people. Nicole Atkinson is fantastic, and I know that she has gone through a lot with the situation, as have all of Shanann's friends. But I mean, I remember the first time I ever met Nicole Atkinson, and she comes across as kind of tough, but once you know her, she's a sweetheart. But I just gotta say, that whole friend group of Shanann's, I was actually at a Lavelle, they call it Thrive Palooza, it's their conference. I was in Dallas, Fort Worth. I think this was in 2001. Yes, it was 2001. So I was there with everybody, meeting everybody for the first time. I was on the team. And for those of you who don't know, I'm also a Lavelle promoter. I was actually in Shanann's downline, but I had joined the company under her friend Christina that lived in Hawaii. And it was actually between Christina and the leader I'm under now, and then one other girl, I think her name was Lauren from Atlanta. I was following all three of them on Instagram, and I had no idea at the time that Christina was Shadan's Christina. Like, I just kind of did a Google, or not a Google search, but like a hashtag search for Thrive on Instagram, because I was just really, really needing some help, because I was drinking too much coffee, didn't have a good morning routine, yada, yada, yada. I was just miserable, no energy, tired all the time. So I'd heard about the product, so I did a search. I chose three people to follow, and I watched them for a while. And at the time, I ended up choosing Christina because, one, she was closer to my age, and two, she was posting a lot of like fitness related things. And for those of you who don't know, I spent about 25 years in the fitness industry before I ever did anything else while my kids were growing up. I owned a gym. I owned a dance studio. Every time my Navy husband would move me somewhere, I would quickly get, you know, hired to like teach all kinds of classes. And I would literally teach like 17 to 20 hours of group fitness classes every week. So that's why my back hurts right now. To this day, I like wish I had not done that, but I did. So now I have the back that I have now. But anyways, that's why I chose Christina, because I felt like we had a lot in common. And that's when I got to meet Nicole. So they were side sisters because they were both personally recruited into the business by Shanann because they were both friends of hers. And I really enjoyed meeting everybody, but I will say that it was a very, very strange vibe. We would all meet in the bar at the first night everybody got there. They would say, everybody meet at the bar in the hotel. We would have like appetizers and drinks and everything. But the thing is that people would always be like watching them and staring at them. And there would be like crazy rumors about, you know, still Shanann circulating. And suffice it to say that Shanann's friend group was always on high alert, and they don't trust many people. And I can't say that I blame them, really, but they're a great group of women. They're very giving and loving. It didn't really work out for me in the end on that team, just because, you know, nothing against Christina per se, but she started pulling away from her business and started doing some fitness competitions, and she didn't really tap into all of us anymore. So a bunch of us did end up leaving. I actually ventured out and tried a different company, which I hated. I hated it. I left, and then I was like, oh, fuck, take me back, because this shit sucks. But I had to sit out 6 months before I could get back into the company. They kind of make you have a waiting period, like a cooling off period. And I almost joined under Addie, which is another one of Shanann's friends, but just kind of like higher up leader. And her, like, she's beautiful and wonderful and so giving and so damn sweet. She's so sweet. I almost went with her when I came back to the company, but I thought it would be kind of awkward if I ever went to an event and Christina was there, and I just didn't want to be put in that position, because I really had nothing against Christina. I just wanted not, I don't want to say a better leader, but I wanted a more, I don't know, attentive leader, somebody who was leading by example and doing the damn thing, and not somebody that was just, you know, off and would, you know, hit us up the last day of the month like, hey guys, you know, what are you doing? So anyways, it's a whole thing. Network marketing is a whole thing, but I love my products and I love my company. And where I landed this time is with one of the other three people that I was watching. And she is a woman. I almost said girl, but she is a woman. She's 30 years old. And I almost said girl just because she's like around my daughter's ages. And I think that's why I did not pick her the first time. I related to her, like her personality, but I was just like, there's the disconnect on the age. So I did not pick her. And I wanted to slap myself afterwards that I didn't because she's amazing. But anyways, I just wanted to say, I know that direct sales and network marketing get like shit on all the time, but I do want to let you guys know that even if you're not MLM, if you're anti-MLM, that is cool. But I honestly have to say that Lavelle, at least my leadership, is not at all like recruit a bunch of people and make money off of all those people because the people at the top make the most money. That's not at all true. It's actually proven that the people more on the bottom are the ones that get the bigger bonuses. So I've made a lot of money being at the first two levels and enough to be able to quit my full-time job at one point in the past. So it's not about recruiting. It's about the product. And a lot of people can make a full-time income just on the products because of the compensation plan. So this is not a spiel for MLMs or network marketing. I just wanted to put it out there because there's a lot of negativity about Shanann and the fact that she was in an MLM. And it doesn't fucking matter what she did. She was making a great income. And that income relied on the fact that she needed to be on social media. I'm on social media all the time. If you were to ever go over to my personal Facebook or my personal Instagram, you will see me talking about Thrive all the time. I'm making reels about Thrive all the time. That's my gig. That's how I make money. I make a good income on that. You know, if you guys knew how much money I made just doing it part-time, you'd be like, what? Maybe I want to do Thrive too. But the fact is that it's no different from a business owner posting about their business or making reels about their business. It's no different from a true crime podcaster posting about their podcast, trying to grow their podcast, making reels about their podcast. It's basically the same exact thing. So just wanted to put that out there. You don't have to agree with me. I will admit that some MLMs are shitty and shiesty. And in my past years, I've been part of them. And I don't really know if it's really the company or the organization and the leadership that you get involved in. So I've been giving that a lot of thought. And for me, most of my personal experience has been like if you get in and you don't choose wisely with who your leadership is going to be, because that will make or break you. And I feel like I could give you guys like an episode just on MLMs that I know of and all of the horror stories, but I promise you that Lavelle has not been one of them. And Shanann was doing wonderfully. I don't care when people say negative things about her, that she was on social media all the time doing her lives, posting her products, because that's what her fucking job was, okay? That was her fucking job, and she was great at it. She made people feel wonderful about themselves. She was always positive. Guys, she was fucking messaging her friends, people on her team, good morning, beautiful, at 7 a.m. every fucking morning. I can guarantee you that if I were to disappear, it would probably take a damn week for any of my friends or associates to realize that I was missing. And the only people that would like realize I was missing is my boss, because she'd be like, where the fuck is Kimmy? She needs to be at work. But I'm just saying, Shanann was a beautiful, caring, loving person. And so many people love her and miss her to this very day. So I know we have more parts, and I just wanted to make all of that clear to you, just how fantastic she really was. And I feel sad that I never had an opportunity to meet her. But anyways, guys, until next time, keep talking crime.